Dick Mendenhall.
News Talk 1340 WGAU.
News Talk 1340 WGAU presents the Dick Mendenhall Show with interesting guests and your phone calls. Now, with talk important to Athenians, here's Dick Mendenhall.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to day three of what less than a week ago was called the future. There are lots of quotes from the past about the future. Panero, in the second Mrs. Tanqueray, said, "I believe the future is only the past again, entered through another gate." Test that one out. Walk through a different gate at Sanford Stadium this fall. See if the past repeats itself. Said Madame de Pompadour, "After us, the deluge." Longfellow advises to go forth to meet the shadowy future without fear and with a manly heart. That's all fine and good. What if you're not a man? "I never think of the future," Albert Einstein explained. "It comes soon enough." True. Put this in your pipe and smoke it. Today will be yesterday. Well, what can we expect in the future, the real future, say 50 or 100 years from now, or even 3 years from now when the new century begins and the new millennium? You know what a millennium is, a span of 1,000 years. The last millennium was the year 1,000 itself. That's the year Randolph Holder was born. I looked it up. The only other event that happened in 1,000 that I could find, according to the Book of Key Facts, was that the Polynesians colonized New Zealand. You know that, Matt?
The Polynesians?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
I wish I could give you more. But Pope Gregory V died in 999, and the Romans rebelled against Otto III in 1001. Sorry. What can we expect in the real future? Time machines? Star Trek-type teleporters? Maybe a worldwide language like Esperanto? No. A worldwide language. Ebonics. My guest today is a linguist, among other things, and I'll ask him to get into that, as well as a few other futuristic areas we can realistically look forward to. Dr. Michael A. Covington is a UGA Associate Research Scientist with the Artificial Intelligence Center. He hopes his future will be a step up in rank to Senior Research Scientist. Michael Covington is the author of several books, including one on astronomical photography and another on medieval Latin grammarians. Was one of those, by any chance, my favorite Greek author, Anonymous?
Well, actually, several of them were called Anonymous, where we have a manuscript and we don't know who wrote
copycat,
it. So there's
copycat.
Anonymous Norembergensis and Anonymous a couple of others.
Michael's written more than 200 articles for computer and electronics magazines. He's the question and answer columnist for Electronics Now. He also wrote an interesting piece in the September 96 issue of Georgia Magazine, the university's alumni magazine, called The Class of 2000, even got into the class of 2100, and we're going to talk about that. And like Tal Duval, Michael Covington teaches Sunday school. That's out at Beach Haven Baptist Church, where you often read the Bible in the original Hebrew and Greek.
I don't give quizzes.
Looking into the future, Michael, can we expect the unexpected?
Certainly. Looking at computer technology, for instance, which is the thing people most often ask me to predict, everything important has been unexpected. Nobody foresaw the mouse. Nobody foresaw word processing. Nobody foresaw Pac-Man. Everything important has just sort of happened on the world, come on the world very suddenly.
What are some predicted future developments that you don't see? I mean, do you think they'll really be able to dissolve Matt Caesar in the molecule, teleport him down to the Classic Center and reassemble it?
I don't think that's likely. There's such a thing as 20th century folklore. There are things that are in all the science fiction that don't seem to be within sight of practicality at all. The Star Trek teleporter is one. They supposedly encode the pattern of your atoms and rebuild you at the other end. That raises some interesting possibilities. Like,
what if they do that to Newt Gingrich? His chances might be better winning speakership but re-election.
What if they record you once and play you back twice or 1,000 times? What if they make repairs? What if they edit the tape before they play it back? But nobody really has any clear idea how that would be done. Faster than light travel is something that is in all the science fiction because you have to have it in order to cover enough ground in a person's lifetime. But as I understand it, there's no real understanding at all of how that might be done. Hmm. It's not like sending rockets to the moon, where people knew for a long time beforehand how it would be done and just had to get the details right.
Mm-hmm. What about the possibility of a nuclear war? Doesn't the Bible say there will always be wars and rumors of wars?
It does. I don't know about the possibility of a nuclear war. I'm not an expert on international relations. I do think we should not be paralyzed into assuming that because it's possible, it's got to happen. Some people have given me that line of reasoning, that if it's possible, then it certainly will happen. Hmm. That just doesn't follow logically. Lots of things have been possible and never happened.
I hate to say this, that could be called wishful thinking in a negative sort of way.
Yes, fear fulfillment.
Fear fulfillment. A piece in the paper Tuesday said the Internet and the web are reaching to every part of our lives. Is that a late 20th century fad, or 100 years from now, will computers and the Internet be the big deal they are today?
Well, I think it's an irreversible change, and it, in a way, I hate to be saying this in the studio of a radio station, but I think we're reaching the end of the broadcast era, where we've had mass media that were centrally controlled by just a few people and organizations.
Matt Caesar soon will be digitalized.
Well,
press
not exactly.
And that's Matt.
The difference between radio and TV and newspapers on the one hand and the Internet on the other is with the mass media that we have now, sending is a lot more expensive than receiving. So sending can only be done by big business. That's why we have Hollywood. That's why we have companies that own newspapers, radio stations, and mm-hmm. so forth. Mm-hmm. Receiving can be done by anybody. On the Internet, sending and receiving are about equally easy to do. So instead of having a few major broadcasters produce the material that you see, you have everybody free to talk about everything, and that is both good and bad. It's an open forum. It gives voice to a lot of people that have never had much of a voice before. Gives you a tremendous amount of diversity. Mm-hmm. There are more than 20,000 discussion forums on the Internet
now. You
know,
there was a piece on the news. I was driving over to WGAU this morning. There was a piece on the news about who you should believe on the Internet. And I think the advice was, if it comes from something like Newsweek or Post, you can give some credence to it. But if just anybody's up there with telling you something that happened, you've got to take it with a grain of salt.
Right. The downside of the Internet is we don't have editors and producers
right.
and publishers sorting out the good stuff from the bad. The type on your screen looks just the same, whether it was put there by a real expert or by an honest but deluded individual or by a con artist.
In your piece called The Class of 2100, you predicted that computers will be everywhere linked by a wireless network, and you said we will talk to them in English.
Right. Or French or German. Or whatever.
Not just English, then.
Actually, Japanese is easier. English has an unusually complicated sound system, so it's a hard language to do speech recognition in. It's also a hard language for foreigners to learn. Foreigners who learn English invariably have an accent because mm-hmm. they don't quite get all of the sound system.
Besides being a computer expert, you are a linguist. You're involved in the syntax and semantics of human language and computational linguistics. The last linguist I had on the show was UGA's Bill Kretschmar back in June. You know him?
Oh, yes. I know him well.
Yes. Talked all about Southern speak. You think we'll all be using the international language Esperanto by the millennium?
No, Esperanto didn't catch on. If people are going to put the... Okay, I should explain what Esperanto is. It's an invented language invented by a man named Zamenhof about a century ago. That is a sort of combination of the major European languages, and the grammar is very regular mm-hmm. and easy to learn, and it's easy to pronounce. The reason it didn't catch on is, well, there are several reasons. One is, if you're going to put the effort into learning a language, most people would rather learn a language that's already spoken by a large number of people, because that buys you the most. People want to learn English or maybe French or some other language that's spoken by a lot of people in a lot of places. The other thing is Esperanto resembles a lot of European languages. It doesn't resemble any Asian languages mm-hmm. or languages mm-hmm. anywhere else. Gives you no advantage.
Doesn't come close to Swahili. I know that.
Right. If you don't already speak a European language, it gives you no particular advantage.
What about Ebonics? The Oakland, California School Board, in its wisdom, decided to make Ebonics a second language. And that's spoken widely, I take it.
Okay. Ebonics is a gimmicky name, which I hope doesn't catch on. There are really two issues there.
We be ready for Ebonics.
Well, I don't speak black English or African American English, but I think it's important for...
That's a quote I took out of the newspaper yesterday, by the way.
Okay, yes. African-American English is not a sign of ignorance or deficiency or anything like that. It's just another variety of the language. People speak what they grow up with. People in France speak French. Mm-hmm. People in different parts of America or different social groups in America speak different kinds of English. And I think it's incumbent on us to recognize that that's not a sign of stupidity or inarticulateness or anything. This is not a failed attempt to speak standard English. It's just another kind of English. Now, it sounds to me like the folks in Oakland may be trying to get foreign language funding for something that isn't a foreign language.
You told me you thought it might be a funding trick, and I've seen that written about as well.
It might be. I don't know the political situation in Oakland, but Black English and Standard American English are not separate languages. They're separate dialects of the same language. One of them happens to be the dialect that a lot of educated people have settled on and made it a national standard language. Now, what's your goal in recognizing Ebonics or Black English? If the goal is to recognize that your students who talk that way can be just as intelligent as people that speak standard English, that's a vitally important point. It's a very good thing. Mm-hmm. If the goal is to confine them to the ghetto by not teaching them standard English, then you're doing them a terrible disservice.
Let me ask you about this. For the uninitiated, by the way, Ebonics come from ebony, meaning dark or black, and from phonics, the definition of which is the science or study of sound. Don't you think this Ebonics controversy is something the country does not need right now? Doesn't the whole storm surrounding Ebonics suggest racial stereotypes all over the place?
Well, certainly inventing a new gimmicky name for something that's been well known for a long time was, in my opinion, just an unnecessary move.
Let me ask you this, Michael. You think racism will continue to be a major dividing line for society in the year 2000 and beyond?
I think it takes a long time to undo a split that has existed a very long time. I don't think 200 years of racism are going to go away in just a few years. I'm not an expert on this. I'm not a sociologist. I'm not a political analyst.
Well, I am, and I agree with you. I understand you also researching the design of some kind of language for electronic commerce. What's that all about?
Well, electronic commerce is what happens when you authorize your computer to make business deals for you. Go out and find me the best price on this and place an order for it.
Now, you're not talking about using your credit card.
Right.
You are talking about...
Well, businesses do this to procure supplies from each other and so forth. Their computers go out and negotiate and make arrangements without human aid. It's an automated process.
Now, Scott Shamp was talking about Nobots when he was here last time. Nobots being your agent to do things for you. Is that what's happening here with the... language for electronic commerce? Are these Nobots?
Well, it could be. I'm mostly working not on how the computer works, but on what language it will use to communicate with other computers. Mm-hmm. And
I hope not Ebonics.
No, not even English. Not anything very much like English at all. What I've been studying is the different types of utterances that people make. Questions, statements, promises, offers, refusals, and so forth, with the idea that a good classification of these would be a good start for doing business by computer. You have to know what kind of messages there are. Mm-hmm. And so I've been looking at kinds of messages that people send to each other in human languages, but the computer won't be using a human language.
Right. My guest today is Michael Covington from the Artificial Intelligence Center, University of Georgia. We'll have more on the Dick Mendenhall Show talking about the future. After this, News Talk 1340, WGAU.
The home of the Georgia Bulldogs, News Talk 1340, WGAU. This is the Dick Mendenhall Show. Call now with your questions and comments at 549-TALK. That's 549-8255.
A century ago, 100 years in 1887, this was some of the news. Germany's Chancellor Bismarck called for a larger army. The Interstate Commerce Commission was established. The Dawes Act divided up Indian lands and America. Queen Victoria celebrated her golden jubilee, 50 years on the throne. And as my guest Michael Covington pointed out, the international language Esperanto was devised. Michael, they say history repeats itself. Will the Bulldogs have the same record this fall they did last year?
How should I know? I don't follow sports.
University right now is about 30,000 students. It's a great concern that the student population and the population of their cars will go way up, and the town's ability to accommodate them with streets and apartments will go way down. What do you think?
Well, I don't have any expert opinions on this. I've known this university a long time, since I came here as a student in 1973, and my feeling is it's a little bigger now than it ought to be. I also wish students could be encouraged to come here without cars. So, my mother, when she moved to Athens in 73, said, you know, it looks like this town is one where everybody that comes here brings three automobiles with them.
That's right. One for every kid. Cedric is calling. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay.
I want to answer this this young man that's on the radio talking about the future. I just turned to the radio station and I heard him say, well, you mentioned about there will be rumors of war in the Bible.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask him, what do he know? He said that, people made rumors, but they never came true. So he's saying, actually, that God is not real in our lives. Because there's plenty of people who believe that Jesus Christ is coming back. And, you know, I don't want this to be a religious thing, but I want him to realize that Christ is living, and he's still here. And, you know, it's good what you're doing and all, but I want to just tell you, don't let put your future and what you're gaining in front of Jesus Christ. You need to have Christ in your heart. That's
okay,
all.
Cedric, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me answer that several ways. I am a Christian. I do accept Jesus as Savior. I thank you for raising the question so that I can say this on the air. The question I was trying...
He spoke Ebonics, too.
Did he? Okay. The question I was trying to answer is just whether there's a nuclear war with present-day nuclear weapons in our near future, and I simply don't know. I do believe there are going to be wars. I don't know when they'll be fought or with what kind of weaponry. That's all that I was saying I don't know.
You, Michael, you're a student of students, and we've had here at UGA the days of the partying, the days of streaking, the days of the hippies, the civil rights and Vietnam protests. What about student life today?
I think students are more serious than they have been in a long time, and they know they are more serious than they've been in a long time. When I talked to students for my article for Georgia Magazine, I asked people, what do you think student life is like today? And one of the answers I got is, we can't party the way our parents' generation did.
Yeah, right. Kent Hannon, by the way, is editor of the magazine. It's a great magazine.
So I think we have a more serious generation of students than we've had. It may be partly that I'm seeing the university's rising standards. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing people who would have been the top half of the university. They're now the whole university with increasing demand and greater rising standards.
You tell me that your main administrative accomplishment was the design and implementation of a campus computer ethics policy. How did you come up with that project?
Well, I was given the job to do, and I did it. I led a team that developed a set of rules to tell people what they can and cannot do with the university's computers. I don't want to take credit for doing this single-handedly. It was a large team, and it grew out of another effort by an overlapping but different group of people who were network managers trying to set up some policies way back in 1990. So besides the dozen or so people whose names are on the document, there have also been contributions from quite a few more.
What does computer ethics involve?
Well, basically, our goal was not to impose any new restrictions on people, but just to tell them what their responsibilities are. Simple things like you can't use the state government's equipment to make money for yourself privately. If you harass...
Well, everybody knows that, except a bunch of people in state government.
Fortunately, I have not had to deal with anything off campus. We have to explain to people things like if you harass people or libel them on the internet, they may come and sue you the same as if you did in a newspaper or on a radio broadcast. It's basically common sense put together with details of how the computer network works, who owns what, who's expecting what of whom. And it's not enough to have good intentions. You have to actually know how things work.
Will the future include mostly ethical as opposed to unethical computing?
Well, I think that the internet is not always going to be quite as unrestrained as it is right now. Right now, it's too vulnerable to manipulation by unscrupulous people.
Do you see, as a future development, some kind of governmental control? Or is that even possible, do you think? Scott Shamp doesn't think it is, of the internet.
If you mean, like, censorship of the content, that's a physical impossibility. The internet is not a company. It doesn't have a headquarters that all the messages go through.
Can't run out and buy an internet.
Well, right, you can run out and start up a service provider and become a small part of the internet. But the internet came out of a Defense Department experiment to create a network that would resist war, that would still work even if you destroyed parts of it. So there's no central site, no headquarters that you can knock out the whole internet
from. You really blew my mind before the show when you told me you have been working with the internet since, is it 1977?
1979, and I was not one of the first either. 1979 is when Yale University connected up with City University of New York and started BitNet, which is one of several...
BitNet.
BitNet, for Because It's Time Network. It's time to get hooked up, so we did.
BitNet, okay.
There was, meanwhile, also ARPANET, which was a Defense Department network of research labs and universities. There were other networks springing up in Europe. There were private networks like CompuServe, and all of them have now joined to become the Internet.
I'm told there are all sorts of computer and computer network configurations among students and perhaps even some faculty on campus. Do you think there are any computer ethics problems there?
Computer ethics problems with students or individuals' computers, the only problem there would be use of pirated software. Some people don't understand why we have copyrights. It's very simple. It costs...
Big convention going on right now in Geneva, I think still going on, considering international copyrights.
Right. I'm not an expert on that. I want copyright law to stay as lenient as possible. We have to remember that, there are two theories of copyright. One is that it's a basic moral right of an author. The other is that it's a privilege granted by the government to encourage publishing.
Hmm.
And I'm not an expert on this, but we have a law professor here, a Dr. Patterson, who has written a book strongly espousing the idea that copyrights and patents are privileges granted by the government for the public good.
I can see that, but I can also see the moral right side of it.
In European copyright law, they even distinguish copyright from moral rights. And you'll see little statements in a book saying the moral rights to this work are reserved to so-and-so.
Hmm. Didn't I read you also supplied the computer ethics information to Congress, or did they steal it?
They didn't steal it. Several years ago, there was a project by the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment to make recommendations about bringing copyright law into the digital age, and I submitted some brief comments and corresponded with them a bit.
You say that right now, Michael, right now is the good old days to which future generations will look back. You want to get into that?
Well, a lot of things are going very well right now, and we shouldn't fail to appreciate that. We're having one of these brief, untroubled times. The economy is doing well. The university is prospering. People seem to have a reasonable combination of freedom and responsibility. People are doing well at their studies on the campus. The students get smarter every year, and I have to keep up with them.
For the class of 2000 at UGA coming on board now, you say the greatest peculiarity may be the overall lack of peculiarity.
Right. This is not the Vietnam era. This is not the World War II era. This is not the fabulous 50s. What is it? This is a period where people are being individuals, and there isn't one big movement right now, as far as I can tell, that has everybody swept up in it or worried about it or rebelling against it.
What is artificial intelligence? Is that like when Jeff Dantzler talks politics?
Well, I've never heard him talk politics, but I did get a call once from somebody asking if we were the people that knew how to raise your SAT score. Seriously, artificial intelligence is the study of how to make computers think like people or do things that require human-like thinking ability.
Remember HAL the computer from the year 2001?
My
brother-in-law told me yesterday, HAL is an example of artificial intelligence. R2-D2, examples of artificial intelligence.
Right. It's hard to draw a sharp boundary between artificial intelligence and ordinary computing, because as soon as we figure out how to do something, it's not considered artificial intelligence anymore. Conventional technology is whatever has already been invented, and they keep moving the boundary.
What kinds of things do you do over there in the Artificial Intelligence Center?
I work on computer understanding of human languages, trying to get computers to recognize sentence structure and meaning in languages like English, French. I've done some Latin. I know there's not a lot of demand for computers to understand Latin, but it's an interesting language. I'm particularly interested in processing human languages that are structurally unlike English. We work on human logical reasoning. One of the biggest differences between human logic and classical logic is that humans can reason with exceptions. You can tell a human being that birds fly and that ostriches are birds and ostriches don't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And the human doesn't yell contradiction. The human understands that ostriches are a special case of birds. My colleague, Donald Knute, has done a lot of research on that.
Hmm. Will we ever get a computer program which can duplicate human logic, do you think, with those exceptions?
We're getting computer programs to do useful things, let me put it that way. We aren't really trying to get a computer to act exactly like a human. It's easy enough to get more humans when you want them.
I know a lot of humans that can act like computers, I'll tell you that. Is it like a think tank over there, kind of?
We offer a 2-year master's degree, so we have graduate students. We have research programs. We have a lot of affiliated faculty. We're going to be offering a doctoral degree. We're almost, but not quite, a department.
My guest this morning, Michael Covington, Associate Research Scientist at University of Georgia's Artificial Intelligence Center. We'll have more on the Dick Mendenhall Show after these messages. News Talk 1340, WGAU.
This is the Dick Mendenhall Show. Call now with your questions and comments at 549-TALK. That's 549-8255.
Okay, back to the future. Michael Covington, they're going to be real flying saucers in the future, Earth-made even, do you think?
What's a flying saucer?
What is a flying saucer?
Right. Well, what are you asking me whether there will be? Do you mean round aircraft? I suppose
that's
good.
That's good enough for me. Round aircraft.
I suppose you could build a saucer-shaped helicopter today if you wanted to. I don't know.
You've written that in 100 years or so, major world powers will include Australia and Brazil. What's your rationale for that?
Well, the essay that you're quoting from there was meant to be sort of humorous, so I don't really have an analysis of Australia and Brazil as up-and-coming world powers. But I do think the set of world powers changes over the centuries, and after all, America wasn't really a world power until World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Australia and Brazil are two countries that are big and potentially prosperous and not yet very prominent in world affairs. That's why I picked them.
3 years from now, the millennium, and the countdown's already begun. Some of the plans include New York's Times Square to become a sort of cultural crossroads with giant TV screens showing millennium celebrations from each of the world's 24 time zones. Concorde flights will touch down in a half dozen of those time zones. The Vatican has declared the year 2000 as a jubilee year, the church's 27th since the first jubilee in 1300. Iceland will light bonfires. England will have a nationwide pealing of bells, and a giant Ferris wheel will light up the London skyline if British Airways has its way. I have a few prognostications for the year 2000. A likeness of Sheriff Massey will infatuate the world and sell out as Tickle Me Jerry. Jim Donnett will be honored for the second straight year as NCAA Coach of the Year because of the string of 33 straight Bulldog victories. Statue of Gwen O'Looney, called Unbelievable, will be erected at Republican headquarters and dedicated by Chairman John, his very self. WGAU NGC will acquire Channel 34, convert it to a Northeast Georgia CNN. Phil Perrier will host the Tonight Show. O.J. Simpson will be in court again, charged this time with perjury and impersonating a hero. My wife predicts Brian Gumbel will join ABC, replace Hugh Downs as Bob Walters' co-host. And I say Matt Caesar's new book will be number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Talk show host and other strange birds I have known.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction, of course.
Well, of course, I couldn't help but be impressed. I see right in front of me here on the studio wall pictures of Rush Limbaugh, Laura Schlesinger, mm-hmm. G. Gordon Liddy, and Dick Mendenhall.
Uh-oh. That book on astronomical photography you wrote, Michael, does it have pictures so Matt and Barbara can understand it? Did you use the Hubble telescope?
Well, neither Hubble nor Hubble. It has pictures. It's a book about photography. Taking pictures of the sky has been one of my hobbies for a long time, and it's surprisingly easy to do. I have a couple of telescopes.
Yeah, just hold the camera up to the sky and click.
Well, I mean, if you want to see anything in the picture, there's a little more to it than that.
Oh, okay.
This is something I've been doing off and on since I was in junior high. And
what things do you mostly like to take pictures of? What do you look for?
Star clusters, nebulae, bright clouds of stars. The way I do that is the telescope has a motor in it that counteracts the Earth's rotation so that as things travel across the sky toward the western horizon, the telescope follows them, and the camera rides piggyback on the telescope. So it isn't photographing through the telescope, but it does follow the motion, the apparent motion of the stars due to the Earth's rotation.
Do you go to specific locations to do this, or can you do it from just any place? Or?
You can't do it from just any place. In fact, the middle of the campus is one of the worst. The university has a large telescope there that I have not yet had the opportunity to use, but I'm looking forward to it. My backyard is acceptable, though not great.
Where is your backyard?
Off Timothy Road.
Oh, you're out near where I am.
Yes, since Home Depot came, it's gotten worse.
Oh, gosh. In the future, will there still be credit cards? Will Barbara still be able to shop?
Certainly. Shopping is here to stay.
Credit cards, too?
In some form, yes.
We've been hearing a number of encouraging reports recently regarding cancer treatments. I know prostate cancer is down, for example, mainly because more men are getting screened in time. I think you said you see as a part of the future that cancer will be cured.
Well, again, this was in this humorous essay. I had to make prognostications. I'm not a medical expert, but they're certainly working on it. They're doing better now than they were just a few years ago.
You said schizophrenia will disappear. They say a psychotic builds castles in the sky, but a schizophrenic lives in them. Or maybe it's the other way around.
I don't know. I think that they're going to find a way to correct schizophrenia on the biochemical level. They're hot on the trail of that now, as I understand it.
You write that by the time the year 2000 arrives, there will be no so-called generation gap.
Right. When I talk to students in the class of 2000, one of the most striking things is, very unlike my generation, today's students feel that they're having experiences very much like what their parents had at the same age. Similar material standard of living, often listening to the same rock music, going to the same places, doing similar things.
Taking the same drugs?
Well, maybe. They say that the people in the 70s partied more than anybody can now. But on the whole, similar people with similar experiences.
Why do you think students are more serious today?
That's a very interesting question.
Yes, it is.
I think that the overconfidence of the 60s has completely gone away. People realize the economy can turn bad. Things can go wrong, and you have to be diligent to keep them from going wrong.
Do you think students today are more interested in studying for the sake of learning or studying for the sake of getting a job and making money?
I see all kinds. Teaching computer science, I certainly see both kinds. It's a field that people have heard that there's money in. So I get brilliant students, and I also get some who really ought to be doing something else.
They're going to bury a time capsule down at the Classic Center to commemorate the Athens Olympic experience. But the idea of time capsules for the millennium now seems to be catching on. Oglethorpe University is home to the International Time Capsule Society. They got a massive vault over there called the Crypt of Civilization. Thousands of the 20th century artifacts sealed back in 1940 that won't be opened until after the year 8,000. 8,000? You care to speculate what life's going to be like in 8,000? Will there be life in 8,000?
I don't know. That's an awfully long way to try to predict.
Aren't we supposed to get hit by a giant meteor or something along the way and get wiped out?
Well, there's no specific prediction of that.
A second Big Bang, so to speak?
Okay, a Big Bang would be very different from a meteorite impact. The Big Bang was the origin of the universe, according to that particular cosmological theory, and that would be billions and billions and billions of years into the future if it were to reverse itself or recur somehow. I have no idea what's going to happen to human society between now and 8,000 years from now.
Well, speculate.
Well, look at the past 8,000 years.
Did that just last night.
Yes, look at the past 8,000 years. You turn your clock back 1,000 years, and we're just coming out of the Dark Ages. Mm. We're in the middle of the Middle Ages. Europe is in a massive economic depression. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world, most of it isn't doing too well, although the Orient and North Africa are. 8,000 is just too far to
how about
speculate. All of civilization as we know it is less than 8,000 years old.
How about 5,000?
I don't know.
Will you go for 3? Ed is calling. Good morning. Morning, Ed.
Good morning. Ed Tant here. I'm glad to be hearing a guest that for once says that he doesn't keep up with sports.
Well, I'm glad to be appreciated.
What's that?
Well, a lot of colleges have departments of artificial intelligence, but sometimes I think they could call their athletic departments departments of imitation intelligence. But I'm glad to hear y'all talking about Ebonics. That's the subject of my column in tomorrow's Athens Daily Papers. I won't give it away, but basically I think teaching Ebonics as a language is about as silly as teaching creationism as a science. And by the way, you know about with creationism, if you knock the A and the O out of the word creationism, you get what they really teach.
Cretinism?
You got it.
You just got all of not all of them, but
well,
all of Oconee
you
County.
Just insulted an awful lot of people
in
there.
In Oconee County, they just grabbed their guns, Ed.
Well, that's too bad. People need to be awakened to some of the machinations of the religious right, for instance. But I'm glad to hear somebody on the radio that seems to have some respect for the scientific method and for the English language.
Let me ask
and
you,
for some real intelligence as well as artificial intelligence.
Let me ask you, what do you think is going to happen in 8,000 years?
In 8,000 years, oh, my God, they'll have some really killer cut-rate sales at the Kmart.
And Barbara Dooley will be there, believe me.
All kidding aside, in 8,000 years, I hope we're around and doing well on this planet as well as on a bunch of other ones. There's people working on it. You know what they say, a good planet is hard to find.
Let me ask to both of you this in a serious vein. Do you think in a few years, 100 years, 50 years, we will be on other planets or on the moon, colonizing perhaps?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
What do you think, Michael?
I don't know. It's awfully expensive.
It is. I'm not saying I necessarily advocate it and advocate spending the money, but I'm saying it is. I think it's something that will happen in the next 50 to 100 years, yes. I think a lot of this terraforming and stuff is way in the realm of sci-fi and speculation, but as far as having small bases on the moon and Mars within the next 50 years, oh, yeah, no doubt.
I
wish I could go, and probably some of my readers wish they could send me on a one-way trip.
Well, there are those who would say that either of us is already there, but... I think doing the exploration is a good idea.
Mm.
And the satellites of Jupiter, the largest 4 satellites of Jupiter, are another promising site.
Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto, if I recall correctly.
Right.
Yeah, the Galileo craft that's there right now. And, of course, the Cassini craft is supposed to go to Saturn starting this year. I think some unmanned exploration is definitely to be looked into.
Mm-hmm.
The expense of a human exploration leaves much to be desired.
And right.
Somebody once said the only purpose of having humans aboard a spacecraft is so they can monitor the life support system.
Right. Which you don't need if you don't have them.
Yeah. But anyway, read my take on Ebonics tomorrow, and I'm enjoying your show.
Ed, thanks for your call.
Okay, have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. We do have an unmanned craft, as you know now, headed for Mars, supposed to land sometime in July. So it's going on the red planet. Do you think Athens ought to be thinking about millennium. Matt, what do you think about this? Millennium time capsules?
I don't know about time capsules. A lot of the things, unless you really make sure that it's in print, you couldn't put technical things in there. People wouldn't have any equipment to play them on.
I don't know. The Egyptians did a good job.
This guy's refreshing. He says, I don't know, when he doesn't know. There's so many people who will BS you, but this guy says, I don't know.
There are lots of questions for which I don't know is the right answer, and it saves any amount of time to go ahead and give it. The Egyptians did a good job of leaving time capsules for the future.
Mm-hmm.
That may be what inspires the whole thing. It's taken a long time to figure out exactly what they left us.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans left Pompeii and Herculaneum. They had a volcano erupt and left two perfectly preserved cities.
Hmm. You told me that, among other things, you write construction stuff in Mechanics Magazine. What's construction stuff?
Okay, that's Electronics Now and Popular Electronics magazines, not Mechanics. So this is not not a fourth line of endeavor.
Sorry about
there.
That.
Construction projects are simply the articles that tell you how to build some little gadget.
Tells you how to build it.
Right. These are for the people that go to Radio Shack and buy the parts in the back instead of the TVs and radios in the front.
Do you expect this seriousness on campus to last into the millennium?
I think it's decreasing now.
Decreasing.
We've had several years of sustained prosperity, and people are getting less serious.
More Ed Taunts on campus, eh?
Well, I won't touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
You say that if there were a motto for the class of 2000, it might be from Thomas Edison. Now we know 99 ways that don't work.
Yes, the 20th century has tried an awful lot of things that didn't work. From the political systems of Stalin to the art of Jackson Pollock.
And the Edsel.
There was the Edsel. One of my minor claims to fame is I was born in the same month as the Edsel.
Really?
I have lasted a lot longer than the Edsel.
Talking this morning with Michael Covington of the University's Artificial Intelligence Center. We'll be back on the Dick Mendenhall Show after this News Talk 1340, WGAU.
Athens News Talk Radio, 1340, WGAU.
Michael Cummings just pointed out to me that the new millennium actually doesn't begin until the year 2001. The dynamics of throwing a birthday party for planet Earth a year early include the magic of seeing the number 1999 turning into 2000 and launching a year of events and celebrations. And speaking of 1999 becoming 2000, from what I gather, computers are going to go nuts because many of the computer programs were written using a two-digit code, 00.
Maybe we can talk about that after we've taken our call.
Let's do. Gene is calling. Good morning. Hello, Gene.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hello. I had a point about Ebonics.
Yeah.
It seems like languages are evolving right now, so they're becoming extremely simplified and streamlined.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost losing the expressivity in both our spoken English as well as even in spoken French and German.
Mm-hmm.
And young people don't seem to be interested in language, or they're not teaching it correctly. Is this a dangerous trend, or will language lose its meaning as we evolve?
Good question.
When we no longer teach grammar in the high school.
Okay, I would advocate a more traditional approach to teaching grammar. I think a good classical education is good for people, but in fact, language is not declining.
No.
There have been studies, nor is it becoming more uniform. There has been research done by William Labov of the University of Pennsylvania showing that even in this age of radio and TV, the English spoken in different neighborhoods and social classes of Philadelphia is becoming more diverse than it used to be. I think that one thing that makes it seem as though people's level of articulateness and mastery of the language is declining is that nowadays we're hearing more from people who are less educated.
That's a good point. I was just, when Latin evolved from very high Latin to late Latin and then into Spanish, did we lose something in our ability to express ourselves as a race of people? What is lost when languages become streamlined like that?
Well, I don't know that Latin became streamlined. It certainly changed. It changed,
yes,
from variable to fixed word order, and it lost its system of noun cases.
Yes.
The verb system actually became a little more complicated as they began to have periphrastic verbs. For example, Latin has three moods, imperative, indicative, and subjunctive. Spanish has all three of those plus the conditional.
Oh, okay.
Also has two kinds of subjunctive, and in one tense, the distinction between them, like hubiera versus hubiese in Spanish, is sort of obscure, but some people make a distinction.
Right.
Languages never lose the ability to express things that people want to express.
Gene, thank you for calling.
Okay,
I appreciate
thank you.
You're giving us another. I used to go to the Latin Casino in Cherry Hill, if that means anything. You were talking about computers and what's going to happen to computers when the year 2000 arrives.
Yes, I think that's not as big a problem as some people predict, but we're going to find out who's using old software that only allows.
Well, they're predicting the state of Georgia will spend up to $100 million to reconfigure its computers in order to avoid that problem.
I wonder who came up with that number and how.
Some lying media type.
It may be time for people to get new software for other reasons, and this may just be the stimulus.
Can you see people suing each other over all that? You know?
I can see people suing each other over anything.
How about lawsuits? A lawsuit is going to be a wave of the future.
I think that has peaked. I think now it's widely felt that there are too many lawsuits.
In your story in Georgia Magazine, you said that in the future automobiles will drive themselves and that manual driving will be nothing more than a hobby and an Olympic sport. I can believe it can be an Olympic sport. They have something new every 4 years.
Yes. Making the automobile drive itself is not all that far away, and it would be a very good thing. There's all sorts of instrument navigation that goes on in airplanes. Why not do it in cars instead of relying on the nut behind the steering wheel?
What about the conflict between professional training and a liberal arts education? Business is dying today to see more employees come into the workforce with something besides a book knowledge of psychology and sociology.
Well, business always wants entry-level employees to arrive knowing exactly how to do the exact entry-level job they're going to have. And then they're not good for anything past entry-level. Businesses actually ask us to teach WordPerfect or Microsoft Word or something so that the students will have used exactly the same software in college that they will on the job.
In the future, Michael, will the sons and daughters of all Georgia alumni be able to enroll at UGA?
Not unless we have a real decline in population growth somehow.
You said something in your book about some things never change. My thanks again to Michael Culligan. Monday, Jay Salton will be my guest, the conservative columnist from the Oconee Enterprise. Jay calls himself a political refugee from Clark County, says he fears what he calls the disastrous effects of a failed social policy in Athens now being tried in Oconee. We'll talk about that and about Jay's favorite anti-president game, Clinopoly, and his demand that the Georgia state government be replaced. The whole thing. Columnist Jay Salton, Monday's Dick Mendenhall Show, 9 a.m., News Talk 1340, WGAU.
Opinions and comments expressed during the Dick Mendenhall Talk Show are not necessarily those of News Talk 1340 a.m., WGAU. Be sure to join us each morning at 9 a.m., for talk important to Athenians.
News Talk 1340 WGAU.